into sports.
20 yards out, Urch to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Well, look, we've got to be honest, things are pretty quiet out there. We'll do our best to fill the show this evening, but, you know, give us some latitude is all we're asking. Football show, there is the attempted ransacking of the entire club game by the Dirty Dozen, the sacking of Jose Mourinho. We'll talk to Pat Nevin after 9 o'clock. We'll talk to Philippe Auclair. This hour in rugby, then, something of a reality check for Irish ambitions on Saturday against the French, who ran in 8 tries. Fiona Steed, Keith Wood on the way after 8 o'clock. 53106, the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, hello.
How are you, Joe?
Nathan Murphy, hello.
Hey, Joe.
Dave Jones has just kicked off there on Monday Night Football. I mean, I'm surprised he's not wearing all black, and he was evoking Prince William and his pleas to protect the football fans. By the way, that's 90 quid a month for our subscription, if you could pay that as well. But no, fans, we're on your side. We didn't start all this back in 1992 at all.
No, and that's part of the problem with this conversation, is everywhere you look, there's a little bit of hypocrisy, but football has been heading down this road for a long, long way.
Yeah.
But when you're looking at this new Super League, and if you're on one side of history and UEFA and FIFA are on the other, and it appears that UEFA and FIFA are on the right side of history, you have probably misjudged things massively. Mm. I'm in one way surprised by the ferocity of the backlash, because football has been heading this way for decades. It has felt inevitable there will be some form of a Super League. UEFA's own plan for a revamped Champions League includes provision for certain teams to get in regardless of their league position. But right now, I think football fans are just so clued in. It was evident quite quickly when you read this plan that it would be massively damaging for the entire football pyramid. It's hard to think of one part of the club game in any country that wouldn't be affected by this. From the very top, from the Premier League, as to what is the point of the Premier League? What is the value of the Premier League? What are Sky going to spend their billions on if there's no Champions League race? Think back to last season, the last day of the season, the title is done. What are we looking at? Manchester United against Leicester, it gives something to play for, all the way down to the League of Ireland and the fact that the prize money for playing in Europe is worth more than actually winning the league, and all that comes from UEFA and television rights. But then within all that is a million different hypocrisies, such as, look at Irish football, look at Dundalk. How have they been successful? American owners have come in even at Dundalk. So, yeah, it's a complete mess, and it feels already like a case of who's going to blink first. Mm.
Well, we've Philippe Auclair coming your way, and he is very much of the opinion that this will not get off the ground. It's one I share, to be honest. Now, lots of other people are absolutely certain that it will and that there's no stopping it. The breaking news keeps coming, so... For instance, Bayern Munich in the last hour have come out and said, we are absolutely not involved. We're convinced the current structure guarantees a reliable foundation. All clubs in Europe should work together. And they make the point, I suppose, that you're alluding to as well, about the system ultimately just being broken. And there's a desperation amongst the Barcelonas of the world who have no money. Bayern Munich said, we have to work together because the cost structures, especially player salaries and agents' fees, have to be brought into line with revenues. And that is a big part of this. All these big clubs, aside from Manchester City and PSG, I suppose Chelsea as well, with their billionaire owners, are struggling to keep pace, and they're looking to guarantee a way of keeping pace. Jesper Møller, he's a Danish UEFA member, and he's come out in the last while and said that Chelsea, Man City, Real Madrid will all be out of the Champions League by Friday, and Arsenal and Man United will be out of the Europa League on Friday as well in a meeting. So, I mean, if that happens, it would be extraordinary.
The flip of that is there's reports in the last couple of minutes responding saying that legally it's practically impossible for UEFA to do that.
Okay.
I think a lot of supporters would actually be very much in favour of it, that it will probably kill this stone dead. That or banning players who are playing for these clubs from playing at the European Championship, playing for their national teams this summer, would probably bring it to a pretty quick halt.
And that, legally, sorry to interrupt. Sorry, yes, you're building to that point. Yes, legally, Euro 2020, they cannot be banned. Absolutely, that's been clarified. Alexander Seferin was in amazing form this afternoon. Some phenomenal quotes from him. I mean, he had a right pop at Ed Woodward. In the midst of talking about Ed Woodward, he was saying how, I've seen a lot of things in my life. I mean, what a great opening line. I've seen a lot of things in my life. I was a criminal lawyer for 24 years. So I've seen different people, but I've never seen people like this, which was just beautiful. I'll start with Ed Woodward. I didn't have much contact with him. He called me Thursday saying he's very satisfied with the Champions League reforms. Obviously, he'd already signed something else. And then he moved on to Andrea Agnelli at Juventus, obviously, one of the real instigators of all of this. And again, a good example of a club that is struggling to keep pace with the PSGs of the world, hence the desperation here to make more money. A godfather to one of Seferin's kids, so they're close. He, Andrea Agnelli he's talking about here, he's probably the biggest disappointment of all. I don't want to be too personal, but the fact is I've never seen a person lie so many times and so persistently. That he did was unbelievable. I spoke with him Saturday afternoon and he said, these are all rumours. Don't worry, nothing's going on. And then he said, I'll call you in an hour. He turned off his phone. The next day we had the announcement. I've seen many things in my life. Seferin really has seen a lot of things in his life. I've seen many things in my life, but not a situation like that. Obviously, greediness is so strong that all the human values evaporate. Richie McCormack, are you excited about the Super League? I mean, it's better than the new format.
It is, but I would say it's going to happen in some form. I don't think this is now essentially like the fans and pundits etc. relationship with clubs and those involved is essentially like a bad relationship. They have told you they don't love you. There's no stamping of your feet and no pleading and all that that's going to make them change their mind and say, well, oh, actually, yeah, I guess so. There's a lot of things that have led to this. As Nathan mentioned, you can go back to like 92 and Sky's involvement in bringing the Premier League to the fore. There's other things as well. Like Agnelli was involved, heavily involved in the ECA part of things. He was obviously chair of the European Club Association that helped bring about this change of the Champions League. The very fact that the ECA was allowed at the table for UEFA to go to bat for clubs and essentially just for the big clubs was UEFA's first mistake as regards all of this. There have been others as well. FIFA have kind of been conspicuous by their absence in coming out against this thing, which is pretty interesting in and of itself. I think it's going to happen. I think people surprised that it's happened or that it's gone like this or that clubs suddenly don't care about their fans. Like, it shouldn't surprise anybody. Like, these are clubs that have spent the last decade plus generating fan bases in America and Southeast Asia and other far-flung parts of the world. You're talking about a Premier League who've altered their kickoff times for the benefit of foreign markets. I mean, it's been heading this way for a while. The people hadn't seen it. I guess they probably feel a little bit put out that they didn't see it coming necessarily when every signpost was in their vision and in their eye line that suggests this was coming. I think we're too far gone to come back at this stage. I think it's going to happen. Yeah. I think with the way the clubs have gone, the way there was a collective putting out of a statement last night between like Liverpool and Juventus and whoever that suggested that this is going to go ahead. And I think there is a sense that it will. The interesting thing now is Paris Saint-Germain, who looked like they could be the only team left in the Champions League as of Friday. But Nasser Al-Khelaifi, their chief, has essentially been offered the head post of the ECA. For the moment, he's declined. And PSG look like kingmakers now in all of this because they are the one big team, aside from your Bayern Munich's and Borussia Dortmund's, the Bundesliga had membership issues that are always going to get in the way of this. But PSG have things standing their way. They've got money of their own. They're independently wealthy. And they're going to decide whether this thing, sinks or floats. And I think the way things are going, they're probably going to err on the side of UEFA and look like the good guys in all this, which is just perverse.
You'd have to think the most likely scenario is a bit of a mix of both plans.
Yeah.
So what we'll have is that these 12 teams, if it raises to 15, are all but guaranteed a place in the Champions League every season. And they will get the lion's share of the revenue, but they will open it up so that there is still a facade of a meritocracy there that teams from any country can qualify. But they won't get that many days in the sun and it'll be a small number and there'll be leagues below that. And maybe there's enough money to go around to keep supporting those smaller leagues just about? Because from reading their statement last night, the implication almost seemed to be, well, we're going to be taking in so much money from TV revenue, it's going to be good for everybody because we'll have to buy players and we'll have to pay you for those players. And, well, that should sustain a good number of clubs, which I don't know. But there's been so many interesting parts of this. Sam Wallace had a really good article in The Telegraph about Florentino Perez's role in all this and how he has basically used the American owners of the English clubs, because Real Madrid, as we know, are in absolute financial crisis, and has got them on board, and knowing that by selling them basically the Americanization of football, so no relegation, no away supporters really, because how many supporters are going to travel around Europe every week, and more of a focus on the experience than the result, that this is something they would buy into. So he went after the Glazers, the Kroenkes, the FSG owners, and got their backing. And the end result is that Real Madrid will suddenly be on a very sound financial footing, which from Florentino Perez's side is genius. And it does feel like that is where we're going, is that Americanization of, you just get to see the same teams playing again and again.
We've complained about that umpteen times in the Champions League anyway. I mean, the luster of seeing a Bayern Munich against a PSG, as good a game as last week was, I mean, we've already seen it. We've seen the, you know, Real Madrid against Manchester United. We've seen all the big teams playing each other. And how many times have we, even ourselves, been guilty of ignoring the other game in a group because it's like Michelin against Ludogorets and, quote unquote, who cares? Yeah. So everybody has had a part to play in this. UEFA had a part to play in this, and they started handing out five places or four places in a league, or to one league, and just one, maybe one, to others. So the idea that, you know, the sporting element of the Champions League is looking to be protected is a joke anyway, because it's always been in favour of the big teams since its creation. So there's going to be no nice way out of this. It's going to be pretty ugly, and probably pretty ugly for a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm with Nathan. I think it'll be somewhere in between. I think the Dirty Dozen will get some kind of guarantee of inclusion in the Champions League. And I'd say UEFA in some ways are thinking, well, you know what? Maybe if United don't qualify because they're not in a great place, having them in is no harm anyway, because it brings X number of million fans to their TV screens. And as Nathan said, and it's been lost in the noise today, in the new Champions League reform announced, the 36-team bloated, you know, Super League in all but name, there are two spots held back for teams who don't qualify properly. So they're almost saying there to the Juventus or to the United, look, if you have a really bad year, we'll sneak you in the back door. So that's actually already sort of part of the agreement. Kind of one other last interesting one, just to get your thoughts on before we get into the news round, is, you know, the way this has been talked about is a betrayal of the fan. Like, I certainly get how that feeling is there over in England, where they're going to games all the time and they want this, you know, sense of a proper pyramid. Like, from our perspective over here, like the way most Man United, Liverpool fans consume their football, it's grubby and it's grim. And, you know, the thought of Arsenal sauntering by Leicester saying, we've got this, you know, we're going all the way in and you're not, is like, it's a disgrace. The whole thing is a disgrace. But just on the fan experience here, say you're your average Liverpool or United fan. Pay-per-view has been milked for all it's worth. This probably won't cost you all that much more money, if anything. Like, geez, Champions League in UK is all on BT now. So you've got your Super League 20 teams versus your 36-team Champions League. Would you rather, as a United fan, watch them play Porto, or would you rather watch them play Real Madrid in October when it's all part of a league system anyway? I guarantee you'll say Real Madrid. And then the knockout stages will always be box office, because knockout is knockout is knockout. There'll be jeopardy and excitement, and the tournament will build to an amazing climax. So, the old people saying, oh, like, this, I'm turning my back on the club. That may happen, ironically enough, closer to home. I'm not, globally, that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen globally. And, like, the Irish fan experience is, I guess, what the clubs involved have tried to mirror in other territories.
Yeah.
Because those fans in Malaysia and Singapore and Indonesia and Canada and the United States, they're exact same as United fans, Liverpool fans, Chelsea fans, Ireland. They don't go to games, you know, 95% of them. They've never been to a game. They probably don't have any intention of going to a game. It's purely a television show, in the same way that Love Island is, in the same way that EastEnders is, in the same way that Room to Improve is. It's something that you watch, that you have an affinity for.
I think there's an emotional connection there for supporters of clubs in England. There absolutely is. People care passionately about English clubs, about Liverpool, about Manchester United.
And how does this damage their experience?
I don't think it does because I think it's far more damaging to the local supporters. And I always remember being going to a Liverpool match a couple of years ago for work and ended up in a taxi with two businessmen from Singapore who had flown in for the weekend and were on their way to the club shop and were going to buy everything in the club shop. And that is the supporters that the owners want in, because they're going to go to the club shop, they're going to spend 500 quid, they'll buy the best seats in the house, and they'll fly back home again. The season ticket holders don't make them any money, who are probably quibbling about the price of a pint inside the stadium. Mm. They don't want them. Mm. So I think you're right. It won't make a huge amount of difference to Irish football fans of English clubs. It may make a massive difference to Irish football if there is a reduction in funding coming from this from UEFA. And even when you're talking about Arsenal getting in ahead of Leicester, and I was thinking about this today about that whole idea of, like, is football a meritocracy? And in one way you go, well, there's Leicester City and there's the dream, but Leicester have to be owned by Thai billionaires. Like Sheffield United could come back and they could technically win the Premier League because they have a Saudi billionaire owner who, if he decided to invest. Is that a meritocracy?
No.
That if somebody comes in with the money?
No. Like, it was like that in 95. Like, Blackburn won the league because they were able to spend bigger than everybody around them. And they had a decent manager to help, you know, coalesce everybody.
When did it change? Because, like, Nottingham Forest were the first team to spend £1 million on a player for Trevor Francis before they won the European Cup.
It's probably always been thus. It's just scaled up with each passing year. Like, Abramovich was definitely another line in the sand from Jack Walker. I guess, like, it's just this organic system, like, that the Newton Heath lads decided to start a football club in Manchester and suddenly they've two clubs and they've done well. I mean, really, if you were starting from scratch with a European competition, I mean, and you were following the American model, you really would say, well, let's pick out a bunch of cities in Europe. Like, Dublin would have a Champions League team. You know, a city of 1 million people absolutely would have a franchise.
Joe, that's how the European Fairs Cup came to be back in the day, because teams that would be admitted basically because they would have a trade fair present in their city.
Yeah.
So I think we should probably reignite in some form or other the UEFA Fairs Cup, get a trade fair in Ireland every year, and make sure that Dublin has representation in the new reinvigorated, more equitable UEFA Fairs Cup.
The Dublin Dons are coming back. It is such a sneaky, awful thing, that it's such a stroke, you know, and the gall of Arsenal to say to Leicester, listen, we got this, you know, and Spurs as well to a lesser extent, is just awful. On the money front, and then we are starting your news round, or I'll get in big trouble, we got to bring people's stories. Just looking through the finances, so for instance, JP Morgan and this 3.5 billion up front, the 15 founding clubs will get a 350 million, it's either euro or dollars, but this is all the same currency I'm talking about here. 15 clubs will get a 350 million signing fee. Now, Bayern last year got 90 million for winning the Champions League. So the money here is outrageous. 350 million signing fee. And then they reckon each year TV money will be 4 billion gross, 3.1 billion after costs. So of that 3.1 billion, 32% of the 3.1 billion is shared amongst these founding 15 clubs. The next 32% also shared amongst the 15 founding clubs and the five clubs who get in of a given year, and then the final 35% goes in accordance with finishing places, winner, and so on down. So, like, the money here is off the charts. I guess that is the awful thing about this, is that already the Premier League is pretty lopsided and there are the haves and the have-nots. This just blows all that completely out of the water. I mean, there will never.
That is the other side. If there's no qualification for the Champions League, and those six teams suddenly have an extra 150 million to spend every year, they are going to be automatically the top six teams. So, are they resting players at the weekend for the big games in this new European Super League?
Yeah, it becomes a problem.
Potentially.
Yeah. Something suffers. The news round on Off the Ball and News Talk is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. Richie, I know obviously the first story would have been this situation. We might skip that because we've talked about it at length. You might bring us the other bits and bobs going on today. Dublin and Euro 2020.
Yeah, they've got until Friday to find out if they'll host their four Euro 2020 matches. Earlier this month, the FAI informed UEFA that it could not guarantee the Aviva Stadium could operate at 25% capacity for its four games. UEFA's executive committee will decide the fates of Dublin, as well as Bilbao and Munich, come Friday. Seville has already been earmarked as a replacement for Bilbao, while Old Trafford has been mentioned as the Aviva's potential stand-in.
Patrick says, it's like everyone's been living in a cave for the last 15 years and now they're complaining that money and greed are going to ruin football. I know, like, it really is true. So that's Dublin and Euro 2020. There is live Premier League this evening. I'm seeing there are protests outside. Yeah. Is it Anfield or Elland Road?
Elland Road, Joe. Yeah. There's a small group of Liverpool supporters have made their way there to protest the involvement of Liverpool in this Super League. For what it's worth, Liverpool could go fourth in the Premier League table tonight. Jurgen Klopp's side, as I say, away 2 leads from 8. Leeds line out with Meslier in goal, back 4 of Ayling, Strike, Llorente and Alliosi, with Calvin Phillips, Stuart Dallas and Jack Harrison in the midfield. Then it's Patrick Roberts, Costa and Patrick Bamford across the front. For Liverpool, Alisson starts in goal. They've then got a back 4, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Nat Phillips, Ozan Kabak and Andy Robertson. James Milner, Jorginho Wijnaldum and the returning Thiago make up the midfield. Up front, it's Sadio Mane, Diogo Jota and Roberto Firmino, now Mo Salah in that starting 11 tonight. And as I say, kickoff is at 8 p.m.
Nathan?
Jurgen Klopp has been talking ahead of the game.
We're going to bring that to people momentarily. We've been recording outside. Oh, do we have it? Okay, good stuff. Here we go. Here's a bit of Jurgen Klopp talking on Sky Sports in the last 10 minutes.
I know some things will change in the future in football. Some things have to change in football. That's for sure as well. Where the power is and stuff like this, that's not right. UEFA cannot just decide things as well. The FIFA cannot decide things. Everybody plans new competitions. UEFA wants the Champions League. They showed it to me. I told them there are more games in, so I don't like it. Months ago, and they anyway do it. I don't expect that they don't do it only because I don't like it. But they showed it to me, and in the end, it happens anyway. It's always more games. And for UEFA, it's for if you tell about the clubs, it's about money. What do you think it's with UEFA about? The FIFA wants a Club World Cup whenever that should be, but should happen. It's about money, nothing else. And all these kind of things. So it happens. It's not only these clubs. And things will change and some things have to change. But usually you have to prepare these kind of things. So like it needs time and convincing. But one thing I can understand that the people think that's not right is the competitiveness. I get that. I said that before. I don't like that we maybe not will be in the Champions League, but if we earn it, we want to be there like anybody else.
Ooh, just about salvaged it at the end. I thought he was making a player welfare argument. This is about player welfare there for a second. I thought he was saying it's difficult for him because he's been anti Super League in the past.
Well, he said as well that the first he heard of it was yesterday, hadn't been consulted in any way, and there's a lot of pressure on Jurgen Klopp because it feels as though he is arguably the most powerful man out there right now in terms of world football who could come out and speak out against this, and Liverpool's fan base behind them, with the supporters taking all the banners off the cop for the game at the weekend, saying they don't want them there anymore, that if he had come out and put the owners in a position, a difficult position, maybe it may have actually meant something. Maybe it could have sparked some change. I think he sort of towed the party line a little bit there.
There was
a letter to the staff from Billy Hogan, the CEO, leaked to The Athletic as well today, got part of it up on the website, basically saying, you know, there was a letter to staff saying changes are coming, we're all going to get behind this. And what Klopp said there pretty much aped to a degree everything that Hogan had in his letter too, so I wouldn't expect him to be straying from the party line anytime soon.
So, you know, it's big when we're 7:24 on the clock here and we're just getting to Mourinho getting sacked. It was amazing this morning when this came through. I mean, how much news could we take? So Mourinho sacked after what, 17 months?
17 months at Tottenham, Joe. His removal comes just 6 days before Spurs face Manchester City in the final of the Carabao Cup. Ryan Mason and Chris Powell will take over first team duties ahead of the Wembley date. Mourinho Spurs, 7th in the table, 5 points off the top four. And despite some ridiculous rumours that did the rounds earlier this morning, his sacking is not connected to Spurs' involvement in the Super League, but is purely results-based.
Mourinho takes moral stand against Super League.
Yeah.
What about the Mourinho 17 months tenure then, Nathan?
It was a surprise that it happened today, 6 days out from a League Cup final. Not a shock considering everything you hear from behind the scenes. Though it's interesting, it seems the two players who are upset about this, the only two players, are Harry Kane and Heung-Min Son, who wanted Mourinho to hang around. So it'll be interesting how it develops in the dressing room. But from a position after the North London Derby in November, where it looked as though they were primed for a proper title challenge, and you looked at the squad and felt there was a little bit of depth, even though they were always going to be reliant on Harry Kane, the negativity came back to bite them. That game against Arsenal was perfection for Mourinho. Yeah. They scored two early goals, held out, but they just didn't have enough. Didn't have enough talent. I don't think good enough defenders or good enough midfielders to do that in every game. And they tried to do it in every game. And how many, we've covered Spurs, it feels like every week on a Sunday afternoon. time and time again, late goals conceded, players just, you could tell he had lost the dressing room at a very early stage. The isolation of Harry Winks, of Dele Alli, of Danny Rose, like, it is the old playbook that happens again and again. And like, there was an inevitability about this, albeit still a surprise that it happened right now. And I've seen a lot of his time at, you know, the Super League clubs is over. I wouldn't bet on that.
Leeds United have just come onto the pitch. They are wearing t-shirts. On the back of the t-shirts it says football is for the fans, and on the front of the t-shirts is a Champions League logo and the words in giant capitals, "Earn it." So I think we can deduce the message there from Leeds United. I mean, that is the other thing. Say this thing really does come to a pinch point. Do the Premier League need Manchester United more than Manchester United need the Premier League? Who blinks first there? You know, if the Premier League said, we're going to kick you six out, would that ruin the Premier League? Or would the six go, sorry, you're actually going to kick us out. We're sorry. Take us back.
Well, that's the difficulty with what Gary Neville was saying yesterday. And I saw a lot of criticism about, say, his ownership of Salford. But again, that is the football pyramid and how it works. And if you have money, you can invest it and leapfrog your way up the divisions. But for the Premier League to throw those six clubs out, the first thing that would happen is Sky would sue the Premier League for everything they have, because they have invested billions upon billions for decades into this product, wanting Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea, City and Spurs. And if they're not there, understandably, they are going to go and sue the Premier League, because the other teams just aren't going to have the same buying power. So, I think the Premier League need the clubs more than the clubs need the Premier League.
Be interesting. Do they in turn sue Manchester United? I mean, the legalities of this are going to be extraordinary if this thing goes all the way to court and becomes entrenched. Last story or two, Rich?
Yeah, All-Ireland Hurling Champions Limerick drawn today against Cork in the semi-finals of the Munster Championship. Waterford and Clare will meet in the quarter-finals for the right to face Tip in the last four. The football draw also made today in Munster, with Cork and Kerry on opposite sides. Defending champions Tipperary will face either Kerry or Clare in the semis, while Cork will await the winners of the quarter-final meeting of Waterford and Limerick. The Connacht football draw made this evening as well. Defending champions Mayo to face Sligo in this year's quarter-final. The winners of that will play Leitrim in the semis. The other semi pits Galway against Roscommon.
Okay, fellas, we're out of time. Thanks so much, Nathan. Appreciate it.
Cheers, Joe.
Richie, thank you.
Stay super, Joe.
Well, indeed. We're founding members. Just remember that. We have the great Philippe Auclair next.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.